We're going to have to leave it there. I thank you so much for being with us, Bassem Raza from Erbil, Iraq, and Asmat Khan and Anand Gopal. We will link to their story, The Uncounted. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks so much for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM, and on the web at kboo.fm. Coming up next, it's the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is also available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Board meetings will be conducted at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The KBOO Board of Directors meets the fourth Monday of the month, starting at 6 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held.
KBOO Community Radio is hiring for a project manager to help organize our 50th anniversary celebrations in 2018. We are looking for someone who can help track and organize all that we have going on in our 50th anniversary year, including publications, exhibits, events, web content, archival ephemera, cafe press, and more. We are looking for prior experience with project management, examples of ability to lead and manage volunteers, build partnerships, and organizational skills. The deadline to apply is November 23rd at 5 p.m. More information about the position and how to apply can be found at kboo.fm/hiring.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Okay.
Good morning.
Yeah, it's scary. It's a scary morning.
Do we know yet if it's good?
We haven't found out yet. This is KBOO 90.7 on your FM dial. This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show. Today we have a very special guest, Jan Hawken, who is a psychologist. She retired recently from Portland State Psychology Department. I too, full disclosure, have retired from there in other fields. And what we're going to be talking about is really the recent explosion of awareness about men in famous positions being sexist and overly aggressive toward women. And this is an important topic, one which makes almost any man who's thoughtful a little fearful, a little squeamish.
I would nitpick that just a little bit.
Okay, nitpick.
To say that I don't think it's a moment of recognition, but a moment of accountability. I think the recognition of this has been going on for a long time. Perhaps it's more widespread now than it has been.
Okay,
but the difference this time is that these powerful men are being held to account for their misdeeds towards women, and that is a sea change, I think.
Okay,
I'd call it a return of the repressed. There's a long history of sexual politics that have involved revelations of some kind, including sexual harassment in the workplace, sexual abuse in childhood, things that were thought to be rare, seen now as very commonplace. And then they're out. There's often this emergence of what some call a kind of moral panic around it, which leads to pushing it out of mind. And I worry about words like explosion and what follows from that, because often what follows is things can disappear, recede as quickly as they emerged. We've known about this for a long time, second wave feminism. In the 70s, raised these issues, led to many of the laws extending civil rights legislation to sexual abuse in the workplace or sexual assault in the workplace. So I think it's interesting to think about what we mean by accountability and what makes it hard to hold on to this issue, because it's an issue of the moment. But I think we need to attend to what's important in really addressing it in a deep way.
I want to remind people this is a talk show, and you're welcome to join in that dialogue or multiple log. The number to call is 231-8187.
And we should also mention that the name of this talk show is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show.
We did.
Did we? I think we just kind of jumped right in. I don't know, it's all kind of a blur. Anyway, this is KBOO 90.7 FM. As Joe mentioned, we're joined this morning by Jan Hocken. And we should also mention that Jan is a member of the KBOO family as a co-host of the Old Mole Variety Hour program. So let's get right into this, shall we?
Okay.
Okay. Now, unless you've been hiding under a rock, you've probably noticed that there has been a rash of stories in the news regarding disclosures of sexual assault, sexual misconduct by highly placed men in a variety of fields, mostly politics and entertainment.
You mean like Trump?
I think
that started. This is partly related to that.
And I'm glad you mentioned that, because I want to get into a little bit later what created this set of conditions right now that's allowing this moment to happen. Because we're definitely having a moment here. I can't remember something like this happening in my lifetime. I don't know about you guys, but it feels like it's been a long time coming. And at long last, credence is being given to the voices of the victims in these situations. And that voice now has enough weight to drown out the inevitable defenses of men in high places. So we're getting somewhere, I think, is what I'm trying to say.
Possibly.
Possibly.
Yeah. I mean, this is talk radio, so we're all about talk. So those of us who talk for a living may overinvest in talking. I think it is good that this is being talked about, but the way people talk about it, I think, is important, and not just talking. I think it's important calling men out, pushing to have men sacked who are in jobs where they feel a consequence. I do worry about that, as the main way this is being addressed is calling out individual men, losing the continuum of difference that is profound in some of these cases where it's all swept up in one category. Women forgive men a lot living in a sexist society. And so there have been, I think, waves of this throughout history of feminism. Like, I'm sick of forgiving men. I'm sick of this, sick of it. And all of the cumulative effects of slights, dismissals, the subtle sexism of everyday life, and women's blunted aspirations. And women are allowed to talk and often more talkative than men, but where it comes to the real action in this country and in many countries, men control the main acts. And so it does seem like a moment, but I think we have to also think about distinctions, maybe have more than one category than sexual harassment.
Is that what you meant by the continuum
of
difference?
Yeah, it's like the date rape issue is so important. That on campuses has been as big as this one, on college campuses for over a decade now. But then it has also been problematic in some ways in how you address some of the problems that lead to this, to sexually insensitive behavior in some cases, rape, but there are other things going on under the category of date rape. And if you only have one hammer, everything looks like a nail.
It is it's a thorny problem, isn't it?
Yeah, switching metaphors.
Yeah, it is, switching metaphors.
This metaphor may get out of hand.
Yeah.
Well, I was thinking about this, and when Abe, who is, I have to say, to his credit, really, really concerned about this and wanting to bring this topic up, not just because it was the topic of the day, but I think because he saw the opportunity to make some important points about power relations mm-hmm. and about behavior generally, particularly male behavior. But I realized as time went on, I thought, well, really, this is big, not just because it's going to be a popular topic, but it's really big. It's really a serious issue. And I believe that it also goes to the larger questions of power, not just in the United States, not just in the Western world, but in the world. And this is something that can never be rectified unless it's addressed. So, yeah, let's do our little part. And I'm really glad that Jan's involved with us, because I don't feel that I am in any way able to adequately appreciate the situation of women. I can project, I can be empathetic, but I ain't one. So this is really an important moment for me to have somebody who has experience, both the practical experience of life, but also the experience of being a scholar in this field.
Now there's been, and I want to lay this out on the table here early in the conversation. Some of the commentary that I've read and heard over the last couple of weeks, as more and more of these cases have come to light, has involved the question of power. The excuse being that, well, these are men in positions of power. This has always been a problem and will always be a problem, and it just comes along, you know, with the position. And it's true that men in positions of power often feel free, just look at our president, to take liberties sexually with the women around them. But I think it's important to note that for a great deal of men, access to sex is not a perk of power. It is an object of power. It is why they seek power, one of the reasons that they seek power. So the commonality here amongst these cases is not power. It's not privilege. It's the Y chromosome. The Y chromosome is the power. And I think it's important for all the men out there who are concerned about this and want to behave in a proper and respectful manner. We have to acknowledge that this exists in all of us. All of us. Whether or not your words or your actions have crossed the line into assault or harassment, every cisgendered heterosexual man has in his life, at one time or another, done something or said something that has made a woman feel uncomfortable, feel vulnerable, feel pressured, feel frightened. All of us, without exception. And the sooner we acknowledge that, the better we are.
On one level, that's an important move in getting beyond the way in which any group can scapegoat a few to save its own sense of virtue. But I also think if we're all sinners, then none of us is individually responsible to seek grace, you know. And I think, yes, that's true, but I would ask, what is it about power that becomes eroticized? And I don't think it's on the Y chromosome. I think as a psychoanalytic feminist psychologist, I'm interested in, and still many of us as feminist psychoanalysts draw on some of Freud's insights about how childish, infantile feelings are taken into sexuality. I think part of what happens with power is it can make people anxious. And many powerful men realize how much power is based on illusion, a kind of performance of some kind. Mm-hmm. And in a sexist culture, you learn that you can rely or turn to women to as echo to your narcissus, to help you feel and sustain both the illusions and realities of power. And I think in certain that sexual sexual assault and sexual harassment is more common in some areas of work than others. It's true everywhere, but it's much more pervasive in areas of work where there are a lot of deal making, there are a lot of shifting power alliances, and I think a lot of anxiety generated around power. Mm-hmm. And I think women also get seduced into the performance of power. And that was an important part of second wave feminism as well, is calling on solidarity among women to confront it. and to support each other, and not just, oh, believe the woman because she says it, but to address some of these dynamics of how women or people in any subordinate position can be seduced by power, and also project desire that she doesn't feel. And that there's an interesting line of social psychological research on power, even under experimental conditions, that people who are assigned more power in a group have trouble then reading or interpreting cues. They tend to take more of their share of the group goods. And I think men in power often misinterpret cues from women as sexual desire when they're not. And some of it is, of course, responding to the opportunity structure that opens up for men who have power. But I think it is important to kind of unpack this and not just see it as a hormonal disability.
Yes, I think so. But I do maintain that it's important for each man to acknowledge, each heterosexual man. You've done something and said something at some point in your life that has made a woman in your life feel uncomfortable.
And so therefore not being on your high horse to just accuse other men.
Precisely.
But that can also be a shield to that same
line
of argument.
Should we go to the phones?
I think so.
Brian is first. Good morning.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
This has really been interesting, hearing all this, all these accusations and everything transpire. My little bit of background myself, it was always one of those guys who felt I was a nice guy and looked around me and saw all these badly behaving men around me. Actually got to the point where I was on the road with a musical organization for years. And when I got off, I actually sought counseling because the behavior of the men around me just troubled me so much I couldn't figure out where I fit into that. But actually what one of the questions I wanted to ask, Abe kind of broached it, is like maybe that's just inherent in men. And I would look around and see these badly behaving people, and a lot of these people ended up being very successful. And I thought, well, maybe that's just inherent, that's just natural, that men that have, you know, this high level of desire or power trip or whatever, maybe that's inherent in successful men. And so that was one of my questions. And then one other question I had, some of the events that have transpired in the last week with Roy Moore versus, say, Al Franken, I hear it in the news like they're equal. And wouldn't you consider the events around Al Franken's accusation? He's in the entertainment industry. It's sort of kind of seems par for the course, whereas Roy Moore was and I'm not saying it's okay, but Roy Moore was going after young girls in a public setting. Doesn't it seem, do all these accusations get kind of, they're all equal?
I think what Jan was getting at earlier when she was talking about the continuum is that there is this tendency to equivocate and to lump all these offenses together. But I don't think it takes a lot to ascertain that the pedophilia of Roy Moore is something on quite another level than the harassment of committed by Al Franken. Neither is an acceptable behavior, but certainly I would say one's quite a bit more severe than the other.
And I want to add something here. Unfortunately, and this is an important discussion, and it's probably more universal among men and women in the world than we would like to acknowledge, but unfortunately, in our system, the way we structure power, really there's an equivalence to dominance of women by men to the dominance of a specifically capitalist system. And I think we can't ignore that. Also, we can't ignore the fact that most young men, when introduced to the popular culture of sexuality, hanging out in the schoolyard or whatever, really are introduced to it through fantasy, projection, dirty jokes, and so on. And this is a setup for a misunderstanding and for a lack of sensitivity. It's really a structural setup in our culture. And it's something that I can't speak for many men, but in my talking with people, it's pretty common.
Yeah, could I ask Jan one other question?
Sure.
I'd be happy to answer that one, but at any rate, what's your other one?
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
Go ahead.
Yeah, my question to her was, on one of the other shows on KBOO, there was discussion of this, and it really felt like to me that they were basically saying that if a woman comes forward with these allegations of someone's misconduct, that it is not okay for anyone to question her at all. And of course, gut feeling, it's like, yeah, that's right. On another hand, another side, I felt like, well, isn't there a kind of due process or you know, innocent until proven guilty for the man too? Is it just not okay for anyone to question a woman if she comes forward with these allegations?
Well, the short answer, if I had to answer that in one word, I'd say no, that's not okay to use an allegation as a basis for taking a stance on the relative truth of the allegation. But I think this issue has a complex history, as so many important issues do, that women have a long history of being disbelieved by the courts, being dismissed, having their sexual history scrutinized. It's often difficult to establish the facts of a situation from long ago, and yet all of what we know about memory, as and I've published quite a bit on the subject of memory, how memories are, it's not just about lying versus telling the truth, who's lying and who's telling the truth. People do recall and hold on to experiences that have significance for them in different ways. And over time, memories get mixed up with other memories. So the longer the delay in time and the more you rely on your own individual account, the more kind of fragile that recollection is, and people can be utterly convinced of the truth value of what they remember and not remember it correctly from some legal or forensic point of view. So I do think that I'm more convinced when there are multiple stories that have a similar pattern, where there is some cumulative evidence. I know my own field, if you accuse your therapist of some misconduct, you're not going to lose your license. There's a pattern, there's an inquiry, are there similar complaints that come in? People can get can call in anonymously complaints, and then there's a pattern. So I don't agree with this believe the women, even though I believe in the spirit of it, not in the literal legal sense, but to listen to women and to listen in ways that don't only rely on something like this and being beat over the head with bad behavior in order to listen.
I want to say one thing here. I'm hoping, usually, being the nature of talk radio, men talk more than women, and I'm hoping that, and I want to invite women to talk. I'm not looking for accounts of abuse. I'm looking for perspective, and that's really where this should go.
Thank you.
Of us have histories. All of us may regret or feel confident that we're cool or whatever. That's not the relevant point. The relevant point is the cultural impact of a set of behaviors which are taken as normative, reasonable, when in fact they are abusive or potentially dishonoring of people. So that's where I'm coming from. And I want to thank you for the call, man.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, thanks very much. We should mention again, this is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio program on 90.7 FM KBOO. The number to call, 503-231-8187. We're also taking your questions and comments on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/Abe and Joe, and on the Twitter machine at HonestAbe72. Next up is Tom. Good morning.
Hey, how you doing? I just have a really brief point, and my point is that just last night I was talking to a friend of mine about this very issue, and we were both saying that, in our opinion, it seems like a majority of the people that they're sort of going after are left-leaning and otherwise fairly great people, and it's too bad that, you know, Al Franken's a great guy. I really like him. I was hoping he'd run for president. He might win, and more controversially, I know people that you know, that are indirectly connected with Harvey Weinstein, who also is in many respects a good guy and very left-leaning, and it's just terrible to see people that in other ways contribute a lot to our society who are, it's almost feels like a witch hunt, like this, and who knows whether a lot of these people are just lying. We don't really know, do we? And I wish they would talk more about Trump's you know, hideous history of sexual harassment and rape and so forth.
You mean the one that was caught on tape?
Yeah.
That history?
I mean, yeah,
okay.
Why didn't they make more about that, you know? To me, he's, you know, he's an absolute... I really appreciate you guys talking about how evil and sociopathic Trump is. And to me, his, you know, Noam Chomsky's called him potentially the most dangerous leader, their administration, the most dangerous administration in human history. You know, to me, that eclipses any of the allegations of these, all these women. I'm sure some of them are true, some of them are not true, but why don't they talk more about all the right-wing people who do the same thing? And that's my comment.
I think that...
Hey, thank you for the call.
Sure.
This issue of do we view sexual violations differently for when the accused is someone who has other redeeming values or other values that even are supportive of women and gender justice and decency, and they have this area of their lives. And I think Weinstein has a pattern of behavior, though, that is also part of how he operated as a producer, that had an impact on the women who worked for him or seeking work for him. So that, to me, that's different from, like, I'm not bothered personally if someone hires prostitutes to get their sexual needs met, or someone who has sex, and it used to be in the 50s, if you had sex outside of marriage, you know, that violated the codes in Hollywood. And there are changing mores that I think we need to recognize gray areas here, but where people are engaged in a pattern of predatory behavior of people who, in relation to women who work with them, that's a serious failing. On the other hand, I do think it's important to recognize the overall commitments people make around gender and justice, and to not be this only, this is the only criterion for evaluating men.
I also want to add one point that may be important. The way in which society, particularly American society, which is what I've looked at as a historian and a sociologist, has traditionally handled male sexual aggression, was to create a class of women who, for money, undertook sexual relations, all kinds of sexual relations, with men. And that was a set of women who had crossed a line, often with abuse in family or being used poorly, who had little choice. They were no longer marriageable in society, and who ended up being whores. And there was a class of women in almost every city or town in the United States who were the whores, who it was considered, not formally but informally, okay to visit.
Yeah, and to learn how to be sexual with.
Yeah.
And since those days, sex workers have organized in many places, and the women's movement and feminists have themselves differences on how you approach prostitution, sex work, men paying for sex, and whether it's different from other forms of work women are engaged in, where they are subject to men and have to pay out in terms of making men feel good about themselves, or making people feel good about themselves. So I think the way in which we talk about the costs for women of men's sexual pleasures is a very broad conversation. And I think some feminists think, well, at least this guy paid for it instead of grabbing it. At least there was a negotiation, and under good conditions, she can negotiate the terms of the transaction, versus men grabbing women against their will.
But in most places, we criminalize that transaction, which adds another layer of complication and problems on
right,
top of it.
Like prostitution.
Well, that's what I'm saying, yeah. In most places, you can do that. And yes, maybe the woman in that situation has a little agency and a little room to negotiate. But both parties have faced criminal liability if whatever mm-hmm. they're doing comes out in the open. A more healthy situation might be one like the one the Netherlands has modeled, where sex workers receive health insurance and can unionize and have a whole lot more latitude in determining how much they earn and their working conditions and on and on and on.
Yeah, and I think that whole debate among feminists has been a really important one because it gets at some of these issues. How do you understand the degrees of freedom or voluntariness in any transaction across groups where one group has more social power than another? And is it important to be upfront about this on a broader level?
And I would add one other thing. Learning to be a man or learning to be a woman in our culture often has implicitly in it a set of criteria, a set of powers or disempowerments that are almost culturally imperative. So when you look at schoolyard conversation, when you look at the experiences men, which is what I know, or women, you discover that there are great demands made to define oneself as a boy or a girl, a man or a woman. And those in themselves can be extremely restrictive and push one into a lot of behaviors that one may not have, given one's normal proclivities, whatever they are, may not have been the ones that would have been sought.
Yeah, this sort of anxious forms of masculinity where there's an assertion of power as a defense against feelings of helplessness, feeling like you're really very little and don't have much power. And so you get these kind of overreactive expressions of aggression.
Yes, and at the same time, there's an expectation that women are obligated to prop you up as a man and tell you that you are powerful and you are, you know, you do have agency and you are worthwhile.
And that was an important part of second wave feminism is refusing to do that emotional work and that realizing we all do a certain amount of sex work with men and sometimes make deals with men. And yet the question of why should we have to navigate and figure out how to make our way in the world through making deals with giving pleasure to men. It can be subtle, like making your boss feel good about himself, making him feel like he's young again, in order to get ahead in some way. And these are everyday transactions that are kind of little forms of prostitution.
Sounds exhausting.
Yeah, it is exhausting. And also just walking the gauntlet of catcalls and that and more predatory behavior.
All right, well, let's take care of a little business and we'll get back to the phones. Coming up today on KBOO at 9 on Alternative Radio, author Michael Parenti looks at the newly released archives on the assassination of President John F. Kennedy. At 10, Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15, Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. At 11 on Stage and Studio, D. May Roberts presents a special documentary on Jim Pepper, the Portland jazz musician who is celebrated each year during the Native Arts Festival. All this and more coming up today on KBOO. This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio program. We are talking about the recent flurry of stories in the news about powerful men being held to account for their sexual misdeeds. And we're joined in studio today by Jan Hocken, also the co-host of KBOO's Old Mole Variety Hour and a retired professor of psychology at Portland State University. Before we go back to the phones, I want to say that women callers get to jump to the front of the line today because I think your input to this conversation is critical.
Yeah, let's do that. I want to be clear about that. It's very important.
Yes. And so with that in mind, let's go to Linda.
Hi.
Good morning.
Thanks for having the show. I wanted to talk about the issue of powerful because I think, you know, if there were 12 million who did the Me Too in the first day or something,
that's not stunning?
About people that we normally consider powerful. But where I've seen this kind of sexual abuse is common is in things like you're an illegal worker at cleaning motels or working in the fields, or you've got a weekend job where you are, you're working at a. I'm sorry, I'm having a really funny sound in my ear, a kind of echoing, so that's why I'm hesitating. But like the local drive-in, where you've got the majority of kinds of interactions, so that the power is very relative, who's on top and who's. And that I think that, you know, this thing where the man was calling feeling bad about the liberals, I think the hard thing for all of us is to see people we normally would have liked, we might want to like, we might want to see their movies or their programs again. But in real life, it's messier at someone, you know, you're going to lose your job or those kinds of things. So I just think it's really important to look at the power dynamics go throughout our whole society, and I think this...
And that there are social kind of class moment. Aspects to this.
Yes, yes, there class are. And race. Absolutely, class and race all the way through.
Yeah, and there is a question of which stories are the most fascinating now in the media, and... Yeah.
But I think what really got women up in air and what offers us the opportunity was each, you know, all of these women finally getting to say Me Too. And I think it does offer us an opportunity to say this is so ubiquitous within our society that we have to recognize we haven't known ourselves. And now we need to say, man, you need to, like I think Abe was saying, you need to rethink how you've utilized what has maybe seemed casual power to you. But they all know it's wrong. I mean, they do it in secret. They don't do it in public. So anyway, that's all I wanted to say. I wanted to thank you for the show.
Hey, thank you for the call.
I think it's hard to talk about something that is both a problem in and of itself, but a symptom of something deeper. And to the extent that sexual harassment is a symptom of something deeper, I think we have different assessments other than your point that it is a symptom of power that gets acted out on so many different levels and different ways. Some men have a petty range of power and women are vulnerable to the power of various petty tyrants in many areas of their lives. But one of the principles of second wave feminism was also the importance of support groups and calling on men in various areas of solidarity. And it's a big point now with intersectional politics. So I think rather than having the company hire a packaged sexual harassment training program, most of which, by the way, have produced little in the way of effective results from what researchers can determine, and people sit through them. And no, it's just something, it's just part of a management directive. Instead, we should call on organizations, churches, women's groups within trade unions saying, you know, we have to have solidarity with women in our union or in our workplace, and that it's not enough to just call out men. I think this is kind of a Christian confessional thing, frankly, where you have periodic cathartic effect of either Me Too or You Too, and then everybody feels better at some point. But instead, I think there is this, as you're saying, Linda, this pervasive work to be done, but it can be call on areas of solidarity between women and men.
Just a quick note on the Me Too movement. For those of you not familiar, several weeks ago, the hashtag Me Too went viral on Facebook and other social media platforms. And this was a means for women to come forward and to the extent that each of them wanted to describe the circumstances of their own sexual assaults or harassment that they underwent. And for me, as a cisgendered heterosexual male, looking at this coming across my Facebook and my Twitter feed, the sheer volume was absolutely stunning. There was hardly a woman friend on Facebook who didn't put up some sort of Me Too post. It's everywhere. The pervasiveness is everywhere. And that's one of the things that led me to make the statement I made earlier, which is that we are all complicit in this as cisgendered heterosexual men to one degree or another. And we need to recognize that and acknowledge that in ourselves. Back to the phones?
I think so.
Francis, good morning.
Hi.
Hi.
This is quite a dilemma for me. It's looking at the big picture. I mean, first of all, I just want to say that I really, really hope that people do not equate what Senator Al Franken has been accused of with what that Moore guy has been accused of. Pedophilia is a traumatic experience for young women, and it's totally different. And I don't understand women giving up their powers so easily. We're all sexual beings, all of us. And women as I understand it, hopefully enjoy sex as much as men do. And I think men that oftentimes feel vulnerable themselves, but they will never admit it. So I really hope that we're, like someone said earlier, we're not on a witch hunt. Because we could make a hashtag for men, probably, that would include a Me Too for themselves in certain areas. And the men in power who use their power for sex are totally different than men who get accused of such things as Al Franken has been accused of. Do you guys see the difference?
I do, yeah. And I think, unfortunately, quite a few people have equivocated the actions of Al Franken and the actions of Roy Moore.
Equated.
Thank you. Equated.
And it's almost, I don't know, I mean, a young woman asked a friend of mine the other day, is it okay for girls to like sex? Are we not supposed to like it or what? I mean, it's like they're getting confused because of this total witch hunt type thing going on, to where is sex to be enjoyed at all anymore or what?
Well, I think part of what I hear you getting at is the risk or worry many of us have, where moments of speaking truth to power, to use a phrase, can turn into something else, where people are bringing many, many troubles and grievances into a situation that really has some important truth to it, but can open up many other areas of grievances. So if you only have one complaint to make at this year, is sexual harassment the only one you can make? This seems to be the thing of the moment, but there are many other ways that women and men or people who are identified in some way in a sexual encounter have troubles in this area. One of the issues, I'd like to get back to your point, Joe, about capitalism and sexual oppression, that we do live in a society, it's not only where women's bodies are commodified and women are seized as commodities often, or that we have a culture of commodified sexuality, but we also live in a country that is all very uptight about sex, very uncomfortable.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And so women do have often trouble finding their own desire when you just have billboards everywhere selling sex, but yet there's a discomfort. And a lot of these men who are engaged in patterns of predatory sexual behavior are engaged in very infantile forms of sex. It's very much like 2-year-old stuff. If you want to kind of strip it down, so to speak, you know, like mommy bathe me, pamper me, make, you know, it's, and a lot of this isn't just driven by sexual desire. It's driven by infantile anxieties. That is part of masculinity. It's taken into sexual anxiety. And in this country, there's a lot of discomfort with that. There's a lot of Puritanism as well.
Yeah. Hey, thank you for the call, Francis. I appreciate your input. Yes, and right now the President of the United States is the walking poster boy for infantile anxieties.
Yes.
Yeah. Talk about a guy who's easy to wind up.
Yeah, who might carry them out in terms of nuclear war. So it's really a very serious situation.
And there his grabbing pussy, as he called it, I'm quoting him here, is part of a whole pattern. It's a worldview of grabbing and infantile grabbing of someone now who has an immense power.
It's mine.
And in a way, that grabbing something, grabbing a woman's body, is an anxious behavior, and it becomes compulsive because anytime you grab something, who doesn't desire it, you're not sure if that object or your desire really wants it because you've seized it. So that's part of the compulsive pattern of this predatory behavior.
That's true. And the president has also, on the record, stated that his power absolves him of responsibility. You can do anything, he said. If you're famous, you can do anything. You can grab them.
He's like a walking case study in the pathologies of manhood and how they get expressed also without check in societies like this that are driven in this way by, you know, the commercial and commodity values.
Well, I think it's important to think about why this man is so, I mean, 30% of the people, at least, like him and appreciate him and see him, his dilations, as an okay form of being, how shall I put it, of being a person who transgresses, but it's cool. And yeah. I think that's very scary. It wouldn't be scary if you were just Al Franken or something, but he is, in fact, with his hand on the button. And I say that this is an indication of a pathology so severe that all of us should actually be very afraid instead of saying, oh, he's okay, it's cool.
All right. Vicky writes into the Facebook page, facebook.com/AbeandJoe, to say, as a young woman, I was told not to beat a man at a man's game. This was a grounding in my personal femininity. However, men are the ones who are the wrongdoers, not the women in these situations. And it is inappropriate to blame women for anything men do because everyone knows what is and is not over the line. I am not in the mood, nor are many women in the mood, to hear words making excuses for bad behavior. Now is the time to talk about personal experiences, not scholastic bombast on what is happening now. This is a social phenomenon and a real opportunity for change. Don't water it down on the air. That is a disservice to the community. Anybody want to comment on that?
Well, I think I think she's talking about how we establish and insist on solidarity in the collective voices of women and not just focusing on individual mm-hmm. cases and the magnitude of this experience for women. But I'd like to recall part of what was really really oppressive about how Hillary Clinton responded to the complaints against Bill Clinton, you know, in the mm-hmm. 90s, I believe it was. And, you know, there is a history there, and I wasn't that bothered by that kind of what I learned of his behavior, but I was really bothered by how she stood behind her man and how she talked about the women. And I think mm-hmm. it's one thing to say, I don't know if all of these allegations are true, but I think they deserve being addressed in some way. It's quite another to dismiss women or call them trailer trash or some words to those effect. And I think that was the failure of Hillary Clinton as a feminist, was the outright dismissal for strategic political purposes. So I think we can be respectful and insist on addressing issues without a knee-jerk, everything women says we have to believe literally because women say it.
Okay. Let's go back to the phones. Jen is next. Good morning.
Oh, hi.
Hi.
Hi, Professor Hawken.
Hello.
Hi there. I just had a couple points I wanted to make. According to Rachel Moran, who is a survivor, author, and speaker, sex trafficking is an inevitable consequence and a particular entry route into prostitution. It is not a byword for it. So you had talked about prostitution being called sex work and so forth. And I think that's very damaging to women as a class. You know, you talked about women having difficulty in this culture expressing their sexuality in a healthy way. I would say objectifying and exploiting women in the media, pornography, and prostitution is not sexy for women. You know, and if we're going to call sex work, then that would mean that rape is theft. And that's a quote from Samantha Berg, who is a speaker and leading expert in the radical feminist movement. And I would ask for everyone listening right now to read some of the work by Julie Bindel, Rachel Moran, Jackson Katz, Gail Dines, and take a look at a nonprofit organization, Culture Reframed. We're working very hard to change the culture and make it a healthier culture where women can express their sexuality, because absolutely women, you know, do want to express their sexuality and are sexual beings. But this nonsense about equating prostitution and sex trafficking with terms like sex work is just so damaging to all women. And I'm really shocked at some of the things that you've said, frankly.
Yeah, I think there are different takes on this, and I've been on many discussions among feminists where there...
And this is a real problem in Portland, I would say, too. We are... have the most strip clubs per capita of any city in the nation. We also have the most children sex trafficked of any state in the nation, Oregon. Oregon also has the most sex offenders per capita of any state in the nation. I would like for anyone to explain to me how that's more than a coincidence. It's like, come on.
Well,
this is nonsense. Calling it sex work,
part
this
of
is nonsense.
What drew many of us to the... What drew many of us to the concept of work was that it is different than sexual pleasure, sexual desire, and important not to conflate them. You're right. Women sell sex in various ways, sell other people, sell what they have to live. And for some of us, respect for women who in various ways have to sell their labor, whether it's their capacity to give pleasure to someone else, whether it's being in a server, many roles involve selling pleasure to somebody else. It has nothing to do with your pleasure. It has to do with economic survival. So if I'm hearing you right, you were combining sexual desire and sex work, which I think the movement that focuses on sex as work, as labor, the labor of women, and that in a good society you wouldn't have that labor, but there are many ways in which women produce pleasure for others at their own expense, and how to respectfully address that problem without criminalizing it or pushing it underground where women are much more vulnerable to abuse. But it's a complicated, that might be worth another talk show. It's a complex issue, and there are different takes on that, and I think we have maybe we have different takes on that as feminists.
But, well, thank you for the call. Appreciate it.
But I do want to say that the caller makes some very, very valid points about Oregon. I don't know why, and I don't know how it came to be, that there is so much, so many nude clubs, etc. I do know.
Well, it rains all the time, so you need something to do.
Bad explanation. Oh. But the fact of the matter is that there is a commercial sex trafficking circle throughout the West, where women, mostly young women, but not necessarily, move from one city to another city to another city by pimps and by others who handle them in every sense, and that this has been a phenomenon for a long, long time, and people have known about it for a long, long time. In fact, the whole phenomenon of prostitution in the city has been described by police people. I did, by the way, my full disclosure here, I guess my dissertation was on the vice probe of the 1950s in Portland. And one of the things that was emphasized by older police people talking to me was that you could, and I don't know how true this is, but it's interesting, you could tell how much payback and kickbacks and so on there were by whether or not there were houses of prostitution. If there were a lot of women on the street, and by the way, the assumption was there always would be a lot of prostitutes. If there were a lot of women on the street, that meant there probably was not a lot of vice kickbacks and so on. If there were houses of prostitution, organized prostitution at that level, then almost certainly people were being paid off.
So, Joe, I want to get back to sexual harassment for
sure.
A moment.
Sure. Yeah, we are
harassment
getting a little
happens,
off topic.
Well, and not just in clubs or some shadowy margins of society. And I think that insight of feminism around the sexual harassment campaign that it has to do with the exchanges of daily life in the workplace can get lost by focusing only on sex clubs, which have their own issues of harassment to address. But
yeah,
it's not just about these clubs.
Yeah, I didn't mean to
Or a street prostitution.
To classify specifically that. It's just an area I know about, and I wanted to bring it up because I think it does link up with how marginal capitalism functions in our society.
Let's go to the phone. Sean, thanks for standing by, Sean.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
As I listen to KBOO, two issues often get conflated, but they're very separate. One is the aggrieved sense of white male entitlement, which is a very real thing. The election of Donald Trump, I don't think it'd be explained without that concept. But then the other one, of course, is massive economic inequality, which has just exploded over the last 40-plus years. I believe studies have been done on chimpanzee colonies, and they show that the struggle for status, the kind of status panic that emerges, can create amongst the winners, among the people at the top of the hierarchy, just incredible feelings of grandiosity and narcissism. So I was hoping Jan could talk a little bit about this, maybe a link between this explosion in economic inequality and the exploitation of capitalism and this practice of you know, people with high status lording that status over people below them in a kind of grandiose and narcissistic way. Thanks.
Thank you for the call. All right, yeah, 5 minutes, Jan, go.
Well, I think narcissism and masculine expressions of narcissism are part of the sexual harassment issue, looking for echo everywhere to reflect back and maintain your own self-absorption as narcissists. But the psychology of narcissism, I think, suggests a more complex psychological picture, even with someone like Donald Trump, that clinical narcissists are often quite hollow and do a better performance.
Dial your operator.
There's no operator to dial here.
Okay. Ignore that.
Okay. There is a hollowness and emptiness and a performance that doesn't have substance to match it, that's part of clinical narcissism. But I think short of clinical narcissism, there's the everyday masculine cultivated narcissism that leads to seeing women as objects or as something to mirror back, a sense of being bigger than you really are. And that, I think you're right, inequality contributes to these what gender scholars talk about as kind of anxious expressions of masculinity, and looking for ways to be propped up, looking to women to be propped up, and always fearful that the performance of masculinity is going to be exposed as fraudulent, that there's not as much there as it would appear.
Well, and I remember during the incredibly stupid arguments for the presidency, Trump being challenged because he has small hands, and the implication that would be that he had a small penis. And it actually became a topic that lasted into today.
But the joke, I think, registered something about the phone, even though it was a cheap shot in many ways. I think this humor I think it registered something about, on an unconscious level, that the performance is a performance and people are seduced by the performance. And mm-hmm. I think it's important to acknowledge that Trump is a pretty charismatic guy. People are fascinated by him. The left is fascinated by him.
That's
and I
true.
Think we have to confront our own fascination with him and always wanting to see what he's doing and what is he saying now. And that's part of the performance of the narcissist, is to create a spectacle that's going to make you seem bigger than you really are. And of course, it's conflated now by this problem. He has immense power.
Yeah.
But as a person, there's not much there.
True. And it's conflated too by the communication channels that exist today. He can create for himself an endless feedback loop that tells him how great he is all the time. That's only punctured by these people on the outside mocking him. And we all see what happens whenever he gets mocked. It's silly and it's juvenile and it's narcissistic. You're right. So Mariah writes into the Facebook page, to your guest, Jan, really? You hold Hillary to a higher standard of conduct than Bill? How is that not sexism?
I think maybe I do hold feminists to a higher standard, which is very sad. I know. I mean, it is at the time his behavior and the stuff these guys do in power, it doesn't surprise me. These things are pretty commonplace in many of our experience, but I think it is true. I would not hold her to it in the sense that I would, if I otherwise supported her politically, withdraw that. I'm just saying I was disappointed in her as a self-declared feminist to not have a different expression of solidarity with women, which is, I think, perhaps a mistake, but I think it is part of being a feminist, is holding other feminists to account in finding some way of not ridiculing women, if not actively supporting them.
And I think this sort of speaks to the equivalence that's being drawn between Al Franken and Roy Moore right now. As progressives, we tend to hold our people to a higher standard, which ironically makes them a perfect foil for the right, which is able to say, well, who cares about Roy Moore or about Trump, because look at Al Franken. And there's a sort of both sides-ism that happens that's really pretty false when you get down to it.
Unfortunately, I think we're, we're kind of running out of time here, and this is a topic that obviously is worthy of much more discussion, much Indeed. More dialogue, and much more evidence. And I hope we can do this not right away again, but we should do this again. Sure. This is important yep. stuff.
And lots of you wrote in today with comments that we were unable to get to, so I will do my best to get to those in the coming days. I want to thank our guest, Dr. Jan Hocken, very much. Thank you. Your perspective was invaluable today.
Thank you for having me here.
All right. This has been the Abe and Joe Talk Radio program on KBOO 90.7 FM. We'll be back at you next week.
It's coming from the field that this ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. The war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay.
You are listening to KBOO Portland. The time is 9 a.m. And coming up next is Alternative Radio. Author Michael Parenti looks at the newly released archives on the assassination of President John F. Kennedy. At 10, it's Air Cascadia. Headlines, interviews, and commentary. And at 10:15, it's Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. At 11 on stage and studio, D. May Roberts presents a special documentary on Jim Pepper, the Portland Jazz Museum.